year is 2025, and the bug has won. People live underground now, obeying the rule of one in isolated bunkers, unless you have the right kind of connections, in which case you can have an island. Compliance is enforced by continuous Zoom calls in the bunkers and by heavily armed robot dogs that patrol the streets. Citizens below the rank of Baron have been conscripted to work for Amazon and can only emerge wrapped in plastic sheeting to make deliveries. Prime Minister Alan Sugar says we could be out by Christmas.
Now, more than ever, we need...
Radio. Once we understand the bug, we will defeat it.
Are you ready for...
The only good bug is a dead bug.
Shoot a nuke down a bug hole, you got a lot of dead bugs, all right?
Some say that a live and let live policy is preferable to war with the bug.
I say kill them all!
Yeah!
Put it on and leave it on.
So, the bug is back. Properly. It was shit before, and it's shit now. How shit is it gonna get? Will there be anything left when it's over? And when's it gonna get its act together and finally take a shot at Big Nige?
You tell me on 0345 6060973. Frankly, I think it's pathetic.
We're up on iTunes, Spotify, Audio Boom and Threads Radio. That's threadsradio.com. And you can follow us on @BugRadio2020 on Twitter and Instagram. Give us a click, give us a 5-star review. To drag it all back out of the closet, I'm joined, as always, by my esteemed pilot fish, Mr. Kieran Monks-Kaufman. Are you enjoying this? I mean, you'd have to be a fucking psychopath, wouldn't you, to enjoy this?
I want to emphasize...
Not this show, you know, like the situation.
Nobody wanted this. That's what I want to emphasize. When we signed off in, what was it, June last time?
July, I think.
Yeah, things seemed a little more rosy. There was gambling in the meadows, people enjoying one another's company in large groups. Carol Sikora, this sort of weird health mascot for the government.
He's really good friends with my auntie, so careful.
All right. Okay, a lot of respect. So, you know, there was some grounds for optimism. So we figured, you know, we'd done our bit. Everybody, you can take it from here. Just maybe we're through the worst of the plague. But the bug is a slippery... motherfucker, and it's back in business. It's worse than ever, or seems to be heading that way. So the least we can do is try to hold your hands through the darkness.
Quite right. A few bits of housekeeping. Firstly, you might remember at the end of our inaugural season, which was in July, I think it was, we said we were going to work on some new ideas, you know, some new angles. We were going to take our work underground, basically, into a sort of sprawling Bond villain laboratory complex with shark tanks and beakers full of blue liquid bubbling away and machines going pippy, pippy, pap, pap, pip. We've done none of that, basically. We're just hauling out exactly the same shit as last time, stamping in a bit of bicarb and slinging it out in a different color baggie, basically, because we're trying to get some sponsorship money from Manscaped. Everyone else seems to have been rained on with Manscaped money. And you and I are obviously both enthusiastic Manscapers, as I'm sure people can imagine. So sorry about that. The second thing is we've got a new slot. So we're going to be on the radio on Thursdays, just before Rave O'Clock on Threads Radio. What time's Rave O'Clock, by the way? When do people normally start on the horse tranquilizers these days in the bug era? Like five-ish?
It's late, but... I believe that we'll be going out at 3.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm sorry if you've got your spangle on early this evening and you don't really want to hang in with this. And the third thing is we've moved house, haven't we?
Yeah, we've been driven out of town. You know,
that's right.
One of the sort of lower key victims of the pandemic in this sense, but also with its upsides. So I'm now in more southern London, which in the nicest possible way should be flattened. Because there's hills everywhere, and they're pointless hills. You go up one, and then you're down one, and you don't get anywhere, but you've become nauseous. but it's a nice spot. Fuck boxes. My world is boxes, just endless boxes, filling them up, yeah, undoing them, smashing them up, chasing after recycling people from the council. And we're going to get onto this, but nobody's trash is going anywhere right now because it's just too competitive. Everyone's at home generating piles of filth, and it's becoming, you know, quite a concern. But the cats are a lot happier. That's another thing that happened between the beginning of the previous series and now. Got these two very nice, fluffy cats. They're enjoying themselves in a garden now. Managed a couple of jaunts as well. Like we did a holiday where we all went to play tennis in Spain, but then we all had to quarantine ourselves, so that was a bit of a shame. And now it's not the tennis season anyway, so we're done with that. It's just another sort of extremely miserable winter approaching. How's Kent?
Yeah, I mean, I moved out to Canterbury. I used to live with my sister and my mate, and they basically moved out, and I thought, well, I mean, a one-bedroom flat in London is about, I don't know, £1,300 a month, £1,400 a month or something. I mean, you can get like a windowless hole for less than that, like next to a dual carriageway. But so, yeah, I just came out here and I can work at home. A part of me thinks that people in Kent are now going to have to get an increase in what we've been dealing with as Londoners for decades, because there's all these work from home wankers, basically, like me, who are moving out here. And now all the rents are going to be going up. So I don't know, where are they going to go?
I was just going to like ask you, have you been well received in Kent? I mean, you mentioned that there might be some hostility to the super spreaders of the city coming down, monopolizing their resources, eating up their broadband width, their bandwidth.
It's funny, it's immediately noticeable just how much friendlier people are unless you go anywhere near them. People are hardcore out here with their social distancing. Like, there's lines of 70-year-old women queuing up outside Fenwick's. And it's not even a mask thing anymore. It's like headgear. And if you accidentally go anywhere near them while you're answering a work email on your phone or whatever, like, they will get leery. Or they'll press themselves against the glass and, like, hiss at you like a kind of feral cat. But other than that, it is really good. I mean, I haven't got into any fights. I went into a vape shop and the guy was just a bit of a wanker. I didn't call him wanker, but I just sort of... But that was about as shirty as it's got.
So it's broadly positive, but I guess, you know, that hostility is well-founded because, I mean, you are invading their territory, bringing Lord knows what menaces. So it's going to be high fences and fortifications. Radio. So how did we get here? I mean, for a time, it appeared the infection was under control, and in some parts of the world, it is. We saw sports events with full capacity in New Zealand over the weekend, concerts full of fans in Taiwan. So not everywhere is as dumb or as fucked as us, but around here, we're seeing skyrocketing infection rates and hospitalizations and deaths. Mm. It feels a lot like sort of the beginning of March again, when everybody's sort of trying to postpone the inevitable and making it a lot worse in the process. So I wonder, can we retrace our footsteps to ask what went wrong?
I've got a bit of a crackpot theory. I've got a bit of a sort of Piers Corbyn-style theory. You might remember the weekend that would have been Notting Hill Carnival weekend. So it's the last weekend in August, was freezing, just randomly freezing. People had been used to 25, 30 degrees, and then it suddenly just plummeted to about 5 or 6, even in London. The first reports of a huge spike in infections started to drip out about 7 to 14 days after that weekend. So my theory is millions of people made arrangements to meet up in the parks or in their gardens or whatever, and then it was ridiculously cold. So instead, they all went indoors and got pissed in the front room. And that's when the bug filled its boots. That's just my theory. Is that crazy? Because it's not like the bug likes cold or hot. Nothing to do with that.
I think the bug does like
cold. What it likes is people being in enclosed spaces. That's what it likes.
Yeah, that's right.
And so if there's a temperature drop, there are more people in enclosed spaces. That's the
idea. Oh, yeah? Does that correlate to the figures that weekend?
Well, it correlates to the first reports of the spike. That's when it was brown trousers time again. That's what I remember.
But also, let's apportion some more blame upwards, because also quite recently our bosses were encouraging us to be rather sociable. You may recall silver tongue charmer Rishi Sunak instructing us to eat out all the time in enclosed spaces and incentivizing this fiscally and telling everybody to go back to work in offices. And at this point, I suppose the intervention of mayoral candidate Sean Bailey wasn't helpful either.
Yeah, he says, London will not survive home working. Londoners must get back to their workplaces to save the economic future of the city. Somebody on the internet pointed out that the London economy has in the past survived a fire in the 17th century, which wiped out 90% of its buildings, and also another plague in the 14th century, which killed about 30% of the population of Europe. So you'd have thought it would just about manage home working. But I don't know, is he right? And will London just have to change?
I mean, there's been some interesting conjecture on whether the movement towards megacities that's been happening around the world will be challenged by the bug. Hmm. So urbanization has been one of the most significant developments of the last couple of decades, that more and more people are moving from the country to the city. But if the major advantages of the city, which would be adjacent to workplaces, the social and cultural life, things like that are no longer there, then there's less of an incentive to keep getting ripped off for windowless shoeboxes.
Yeah.
A lot of this talk has been around New York, where apparently a lot of people have been decamping from. Mm. But I suppose also it applies to London as well. So far be it from me to come to Sean Bailey's defense, because he's been spouting a lot of nonsense lately. He's been... Wait, fuck, I forgot the specific Sean Bailey nonsense. Do you remember what the recent nonsense was?
No, I mean, it comes so thick and fast.
He said that Sadiq Khan needs to let people go to football matches again.
Well, I mean, that I wouldn't be against.
But it's obviously that's the government's responsibility. And in France and other countries where they do let spectators into sports events, that was the government's call.
That's basically his strategy, isn't it? Just try to blame Sadiq Khan for stuff that the Tories have done.
Right. The bailout for TfL with the strings attached of increasing the congestion charges, cutting... Yeah. Free passes for younger and older people. He was happy to lay at the mayor's door. And I suppose he has this useful ambiguity of, is he lying or unintelligent? You know, you can never really pin him down. So that is, I suppose, a useful constructive ambiguity.
Hmm.
But back to the main point, which is how we arrived at Shit Sandwich Part 2. Relatively recently, when circumstances were better, we were being told to pursue all these high-risk activities, you know, to work indoors, to socialize indoors, coupled with, obviously, the high-profile failures of tracing. And what's emerged is that the government ignored this advice to have a circuit breaker lockdown a few weeks ago.
Hmm.
So, I mean, it seems like an own goal, that this didn't need to be this shit. Although, as you've pointed out, maybe... Given the strengths of the bug, you either take your medicine fast or slow, but you can't get around it, really.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if the bug is in the ascendancy anywhere in the world, then everyone is at risk. But, I mean, partly this has come about because we basically locked down much too late. And there's other countries which locked down much earlier and then were able to open up their economies much faster. The most persuasive stuff I've heard recently says that lockdowns, certainly to this extent, would largely be unnecessary if we had a really effective localized test and trace system like they have in Southeast Asia, which they've had to develop in the past, largely because they've had a few of these kind of epidemics before. But sadly, instead of hiring NHS people to do it, he's got his city crony, Dido Harding, who used to run TalkTalk. If we managed to get that right, there's no way we would still be talking about these sorts of lockdowns now. Do you think that there was a decision made in number 10 that the British people are just unmanageable? They're just ungovernable, and there's no way that they would ever submit to the sort of, you know, public monitoring that is commonplace in some parts of Southeast Asia.
How much are we to blame, as the tabloids like to call us? How much is this down to COVIDiots who cannot maintain the proper discretions, people who cannot be sensible? And I suppose for most of us by now, we try to apply our own reasoning as much as we try to follow the very incoherent and rapidly changing government guidelines. So are we morons? Did we fuck this up?
Well, by we, do you mean they?
I mean, let's think about our behavior in recent times. So I went on a holiday. I enthusiastically embraced outdoor pub culture and to a lesser extent, sort of reasonably segregated indoor lifestyle. And I think probably a lot of people went further than that as well. I'm looking at a pie chart attributable to Public Health England, which says that 60% of new infections outside of the home, which I guess you can do less about. If it's in the home, it's almost, it's a fait accompli, it's a done deal. 60% were from universities and workplaces. So that, to my mind, is to do with people being pushed back into dangerous situations prematurely. Those are relatively new interventions. And significantly, the hospitality sector
is 3%, yeah.
Right. And then this 10 p.m. thing for pubs and restaurants, which people are taking the piss out of and doing cool memes about how the bug is just like getting up at 9:30 and just heading out for a night on the town. And obviously you can't outsmart it that way. It operates during daylight hours too. But I guess that's to do with all the friendliness that can take place in well-lubricated environments. So let's spare a thought for the students as well, because I had a reasonably enjoyable freshers week. It was, you know, a lot of fun meeting new people, going to new places. I boycotted Oceania, but so I feel terrible for all these people who are going away for these formative experiences and then just being imprisoned in these outsourced Serco hellholes.
We've barely got any milk and bread to last us till Monday. We can't do our washing. I mean, it's a bit pathetic.
And I mean, also, that's another point that we skirted over a bit before, which is that a lot of the failure is on these outsourced companies that were supposed to be running all these important programs. And they never don't fuck it up, even on its own terms. I mean, they're sort of, you know, when they're running private prisons and deporting people, you know, it's evil, but it's also they're shit at it. And so, I mean, the likelihood of them being effective in these absolutely vital tasks was always a long shot.
Yeah, but it's not about them being good at it, is it? It's about people lining their own pockets. That's what that's all that's
right. It's just. I mean, it sort of goes under the radar, the incredibly broad sweep of responsibilities that the Serco's, the G4S's have been given. I mean, when we have an Olympics, it's basically the G4S Olympics running the, you know, the security, the logistics. You know, so any sort of contract of any size, any responsibility goes to these sort of shady megacorps.
Yeah. And also the whole idea of privatization means that you're supposed to have competition, right? And yet all of it goes to these two or three hulking
and they
firms.
Reliably so fuck it up, obviously, because competition does not exist. So there's no incentive to not fuck it up. So presumably the government, when they're apportioning these contracts, they can hardly be surprised by the outcomes.
Yeah.
So we've looked at the role of government and we've looked at, you know, to what extent people like you and me are responsible. Not that much. And what about morons? Piers Corbyn, a friend of the show in the sense that we talk about him a lot. Do you think his faction have much responsibility, or is that not just a kind of very fringe thing that people can laugh at?
Well, apparently, I mean, I didn't count all of these people, but apparently there were 25,000 people who went to this hashtag no new normal protest in Parliament Square. Part of me thinks it's an ignorance problem, but then again, I'm ignorant. I mean, I'm not an epidemiologist. I've got no medical degree. So if some woman with loads of letters after her name shows up on the telly and tells me to wear a mask, I'll wear a mask. But these people will go on a subreddit or whatever, and now they think they know more than someone who's studied epidemiology for 20 years. That's not an ignorance problem. That's an arrogance problem.
But so many of our institutions have richly merited distrust, whether it's the government or leading media institutions or business. But
yeah. But this is about the medical community. Has the medical community done that?
Well, I suppose you could say that people like Chris Whitty have sort of sold themselves to be shields for the government and people that we could trust. Like, what was his name? The dildo guy?
Neil Ferguson.
People like that. So we're supposed to be able to trust them, but then it seems like generally the government sort of says, hey, do you want to be on TV? Do you want a book deal? Do you want some profile? Do you want to tell everybody that everything's okay? And then that is an irresistible offer and a chance to torch one's integrity, which people are not willing to pass up. So, yeah, you can understand where the distrust comes from, and especially given how badly handled this crisis has been. I don't want to name drop what Gramsci would call a morbid symptom. You know, the skepticism that we need is coming from such moronic quarters.
Now, more than ever, we need...
Radio. Commence blathering.
There's been a whole hoo-ha about how bad the messaging's been.
We think it's important to stay sane.
Radio. Baby, let's go! When the fuck is this going to end?
Just trying to find something properly weird.
We need to find whatever it takes to get through this rotten fucking plague.
Radio. So, it appears that the restrictions are intensifying across the country, and if your area has been spared until now, it won't be for long. This also applies to some of our international listeners, although probably not the ones in places like New Zealand, Japan, Taiwan. So the government has introduced this new tier system, which is likely to prohibit household mixing. So it's not going to go back to the full levels of the spring, touch wood, or at least for now, but a lot of people are going to be limited to their households again. But now that we've had that sweet taste of freedom, will people go willingly? Will people be cajoled back into their box so readily? Or will it take a little more coercion?
I think most people will. I mean, after the Cummings thing, the whole country was absolutely furious. But most people still abided by the rules. But, I mean, just as an example, the people who went to that No New Normal protest, the Piers Corbyn thing, there's 25,000 people there. If you've got a city of 12 million, 25,000 people wandering around saying fuck you to the rules, it's all you need. It's all you need, basically, to keep the R around two the whole time. The other thing is, what we saw right at the beginning of this in March, things started to kick off in Italy. That was the first country. The plans for the lockdown were leaked. And so there was a 24, 48-hour window where loads of people in the Lombardy region thought, right, well, I can't be bothered getting locked down. And they just jumped the quarantine to go to their holiday homes or to go and stay with friends in other areas of the country. So what we've got now is Liverpool. That looks like the place that's going to get knocked the hardest, right? The plan is to fuck Liverpool first. If you give people any kind of window, won't there be large numbers of people from Liverpool, some of whom have got the bug, jumping the quarantine and going out to other parts of the country?
Can localization work, given that there are no borders, that people can very easily travel from place to place, and many are required to on a regular basis? It seems very optimistic to feel that the bug is going to obey constituency boundaries. And then on to the willingness of people to obey. Increasingly, the intergenerational divide rears its head as the more financially insecure younger population is required to bear these restrictions that are more difficult for people that need to work, that need to study, relative to the property-owning, better-off older people who can more easily work at home or be retired. It's a sore point. It's a point of friction. And it's not hard to see that beginning to fray. You know, the sort of solidarity. I mean, the only way that's going to stick is if some severe inducements, bungs, if you will, are made to the people that need it. And it seems like the government is now less willing to go Keynesian with things like compensation schemes.
They're getting stingier. Yeah.
There's a lot of other points of friction as well. I mean, I know business owners who are up shit creek and who have every incentive to accommodate implausibly large households.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're not going to get bailed out this time. So
Irvin Welsh, he said, remember to go out in two mobs of six rather than one mob of 12.
Yeah, so if there's not coercion, it relies on people's civic responsibility. And if they don't have the incentives to survive, I mean, if they don't have the conditions to survive in these circumstances, then they're not going to follow it. Mm. I mean, you're seeing like friction points all over. I mean, at the beginning, I guess a lot of people, it was such a unique situation. And there were...
Yeah, there was a novelty.
And there were the sort of unusually... un-Tory kind of offers to a lot of people that made it just about possible. I mean, whether it was furloughing businesses or supporting self-employed people. But the well seems to have run dry for this. So, I mean, what is the offer to younger people or to business owners that's going to incentivize them to put other groups first? At the very beginning, there was a lot of lurid speculation about a Mad Max dystopia with gangs of toilet roll maniacs kicking your door down, every man for himself, everyone taking what they can, and there's no such thing as society. And what actually happened was most people bought into the idea of collective responsibility, some taking it too far, but also we had the mutual aid groups of people looking after each other. But I'm starting to see that starting to fray. And it was interesting, there was this big article in The Guardian on trash as a point of friction, that because people are generating more trash and because services are stretched, people are having to be quite devious in how they deal with disposal. And then it's harder for the councils to get rid of it all. So there's just like vastly increased dumping. Mm. And I've seen people getting very shirty with one another over trash cans, and this is something that people are getting very, because people are on edge as well. I mean, and so this is just one of those little things that just, in this article, we now have, I suppose, good guy vigilantes who are sort of stalking potential trash beasts who they suspect of dumping. And in some cases, this works out quite well, and the fly tipper is shamed into, I guess, going and putting their trash somewhere else, which might also be an area of outstanding natural beauty.
Hmm.
But also, this has gone too far in that food delivery guys are being attacked for being suspected fly tippers.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
This is one of those points of friction that's only going to increase as people are more under strain. I remember in the early days how it felt like supermarkets were very tense places, as you didn't know how well resources were going to hold up. And so if people are put back into these situations, the social fabric will be strained, and that whilst being very restricted is amenable if you're wealthy and secure and you have a large pile to relax in, it doesn't work for people who need to run businesses or work outside of the home. So all these tensions are going to be exacerbated.
It could be that the bug is just going to take its toll sooner or later. And there's this idea that the lockdown route simply kicks the can down the road in the hope of a vaccine, which is likely to only be partially effective at best, while destroying jobs, mental health and cancer treatment and everything in the process. The thing is, I mean, the lockdowns weren't a good idea. What works is test and trace. If it's efficient enough, it can absorb, you know, 5 or 10% of the population being Piers Corbyn's. But we haven't got that. We're anti-bug, but that doesn't mean we're pro-lockdown.
It's worth acknowledging that there's still so much we don't know. I think throughout the first series, we were at pains to emphasize how much we don't know. And not just how much we don't know, how much everyone doesn't know. I know scientists who talk about how every time a very convincing peer-reviewed research paper comes out and another one rolls down 5 minutes later to contradict its central premises. I mean, the other day there was a very compelling report saying that only 20% of people are symptomatic, which would absolutely fly in the face of everything that was said before. And increasingly, we find out about new effects, new symptoms, new types of damage it can do, how long it takes to fuck off, whether it's a few weeks, a few months, or never. how long immunity is supposed to last and the sort of currently isolated cases of reinfection. And then that other issue, mercifully sort of below the radar for some time, that cats can also be carriers. You know, at least that seems to have subsided a bit.
Well, that's all, folks. Congratulations on making it this far. If you'd like to threaten us, you can do so concisely on Twitter. That's at BugRadio2020. Or if you'd like to go into some detail about the various pieces of torture equipment you'd like to use or the music you'd like playing in the background, you can email us on bugradio2020@gmail.com. We'll be back next week. As always, wash your hands and piss off.